If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers, made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. CookUnity was made for adventurous eaters, with 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small-batch meals. Get ready-to-eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code CRAVE before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
Good evening, everybody. The klaxon has rung. It is an emergency Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you live on all of our social channels this evening and YouTube, reacting to the news that Norwich City head coach Liam Manning has been sacked just hours after an eighth straight Carrow Road defeat to Leicester City, and about half an hour, 45 minutes or so after he exited his press conference. That is an image of Liam Manning behind us, which is, you may or may not be able to see. It's fine. I will read you the Norwich City statement. I'm Connor Southwell, Paddy Davitt, Samuel Seaman with me, who've made their way back up the hill to Pinkin Towers to reflect on, another spin of the Norwich City wheel. So this is the statement that Norwich City released. It was 6:45, I believe, the time that this was pushed out by the club. I'll read it in full, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what has happened and also the events of the last couple of hours, but also today and maybe even the last 24 hours in general. Norwich City said in a statement, Norwich City can confirm that the club have parted company with head coach Liam Manning, assistant coach Chris Hogg, and first team coach analyst James Krause have also left the club. Sporting director Ben Napper said, "We have tried absolutely everything possible to work through this incredibly challenging period." What are you laughing for?
This comment from Carl. Go on, you keep reading.
All right, sorry. absolutely everything possible to work through this incredibly challenging period. But unfortunately, given recent run of results and performances, we have been left with no choice other than to make a change at this stage. Liam and his staff work tirelessly to move our football club forward. They are fundamentally good people, and we wish them the very best in whatever comes next. We very much understand the frustration and criticism from our supporters at this stage. So far, results and performances on the pitch haven't been good enough. We accept the responsibility, but it's now imperative that we start to repair the relationship with our supporters and do everything we can to give them something to get behind. First team coach Ryan Gary, supported by goalkeeper coach Tony Roberts and set piece coach Nick Stanley, will take charge of the first team on an interim basis as the club works to appoint a new head coach. We want your reaction as well whilst we're going to be live for the next hour or so. So let us know what you think, who you want, all the usual good stuff as well. Paddy, let's start chronologically in terms of how this all played out. Obviously, the full-time whistle sounded. We are going to speak about the Leicester game and how that all unfolded today. It was, I felt, inevitable with the reaction, with the protests, with, you know, as I was setting up for my verdict, players were being police escorted essentially out of the stadium to a coach. Unprecedented scenes from a Norwich City perspective. Sat in the press conference, I got the sense that that was it. Just give us an idea, Paddy, of the timeline and everything that unfolded after that full-time whistle at Carrow Road this afternoon.
Well, to pick up that thread, Connor, we were, all of us, in the press conference, the formal one. He obviously, for anybody unaware, what tends to happen at home games, he'll come out with the head of comms, who will direct him to that sort of flash media area where he'll do Chris Gorham normally and Radio Norfolk. then he gets brought to the formal press conference room, which is, you know, when you see the footage on our channels most weeks, they sat behind that desk, slightly raised platform. And in that setting, you know, it feels like it's almost outdated now, but we're desperately scrambling to try and relabel some of the content so it's not completely dead. But in what was now Liam Manning's final post-match press conference, you can see the line of questioning from myself and one of the national guys, Tony Rushma, along the lines of, bearing in mind at that precise point, we were, you know, still unaware of the events that were going to come. And, you know, I think I'm paraphrasing, but I asked him, you know, is his race run, you know, ad nauseum. He talked about he couldn't fight any harder to get where he has in his career, and that was his default setting. He looks himself in the mirror and he knows he's given everything. But I said, well, bottom line is you're not getting a tune out of these group of players. You know, 8 Carrow Road defeats, now 7 in the league, 4 points from safety. All the fan angst and frustration and fury inside and outside the stadium took on again from where it was against Hull only 7 days before. Everything about this is you have ran your race. And, you know, that's a difficult sort of scenario to be in because, you know, you can see he's hurting. You can see the frustration. He talked in that press conference about how deeply he cared for this football club. And we know his, you know, his links, you know, that, you know, this is his part of the world and, you know, his family, a lot of Norwich fans in his family. And, you could see it's written all over his face, as it has been in a lot of these more recent sort of post-match press conferences. He is hurting. He is frustrated. He is trying to do everything in his power, but it simply hasn't worked. And, you know, in answer to those questions at that point, he clearly wasn't aware of maybe what was going to happen over the hill, because there's no way they put him through that. I don't think, you know, you fired him and then you say, right, go and do the media. That makes no sense on any level. So I think it's safe to assume at that point, sat there on the top of that stage at Carr Road, he didn't know what the next hour or so held for him. But in answer to those questions, it was, you know, just give me some headspace. There will be discussions, there will be dialogue, is what he said. And, you know, I need to go away almost and think about it. You know, I had to continue down that path. He was, you know, at one point he said, could I show him a bit more respect and, you know, allow him to process it? So, you know, I understand that. But that, to me, was the demeanour of, I mean, we've pushed a few images out. We had Paul Chesterton in the room, took a few pictures. You could see his face. You can tell when a manager thinks, what more can I do? And to be fair, it wasn't just today for me. I think we've seen that. We've seen his demeanour decline and decline over these recent games. And, you know, unfortunately, matters have come to a head now. But at that moment, he walked off the stage. He shook a hand or two and into the night he went. And then, you know, you've gone out to do your usual verdict, and I've actually gone out to do a, if you're not already on it, you should be, the Pink and TikTok channel. I've literally pressed stop. I haven't actually uploaded it.
Did that?
So that is now 15 minutes of my time that I won't get back. Thanks for that, Norwich. But at the moment, I'll just stop record on the Pink and TikTok, which was a continuation of the post-match where do we go from here theme. I think we all know where it's going. Phone call came through and you're on 2-minute notice. Club statement is about to drop. Liam, sorry, is Chris Hogg, sorry, yeah, and James Crowes, his faithful deputies, are losing their positions. And there'll be a few quotes from Ben and on we go. So, and then we returned, or I returned, I think you were already back in the press room, and then on we went with obviously the first wave of confirmation and then hot foot back up here. So, me, in terms of you asking for the timeline of events, I think what can only have happened is when he's left us, Liam Manning, he's probably gone into a meeting with Ben Napper and he's been given the decision. And your mind goes back to, because we just had his anniversary, you know, wasn't quite, I don't think, in the away dressing room at Brentford vibe, but it was, you know, very short order after a final whistle that a Norwich coach has been dispensed with. And here we are again in very short order on Ben Napper's watch, a third head coach cycle now underway. But yeah, I mean, we were debating, would it come, you know, bearing in mind it might need to bounce across the Atlantic in terms of the final decision on this. Could it be later tonight? Could it be in the morning? Monday at the latest? I think we were of the mind that it wasn't a case of is it coming, it's when it's coming. And yeah, they clearly decided, probably given the volume of, I mean, Sam can talk about this, the volume of people who are outside protesting in the, yeah, in the city stand, overflow road there, the access road, that it had reached a point where, no, it had to be tonight and it had to be swift and it had to be as it was before most of those actors had left Carr Road. So, that was the timeline of events. But on a personal level, sad, because I think he is a genuine bloke and he has tried his utmost to try and get this going. And not all of the factors in play. I thought Hooks, as often is the case, nail on head. If you go and have a look at his tweet immediately after the news, he said, yeah, it had to happen, but it's by no manner of means Liam Manning is the only issue at that football club. And I think we'd agree. There's many other areas that have all contributed to this state of affairs. That's not all on Liam Manning, but when you're front of house, when you're presiding over a continued decline, you know, even allowing for me for the injury mitigation, there's still enough resource in the building at his disposal for that team not to be 23rd in the division this far into the season. So that's on Liam Manning. He had to go. You know, we heard again, as we've heard the last few games, you know, some choice phrases used to describe his style of football, his brand of football. So it was evident that, and I'm always loathe to put a figure on this, but for me, the overwhelming majority now of Norwich's fan base felt, sorry, Liam, we're not liking what you're offering. It's not going to get us to where we need it to get to. And now we're worried about, can we stave off League One? Well, if that's the case, Liam Manning probably wasn't the man for that job. And now Ben Napper has decided that is the case, given you expect it's him who's driven this decision. We got a sense that there may have been a board meeting earlier in the week. Yeah. We haven't checked that out in terms of officially, but if that was the case, in light of these events, was it? Well, he's got Saturday, and if it goes badly, then we may need to act, and act swiftly.
I felt he had to win one of the three, and to lose two and draw against Sheffield Wednesday, I think it was, as it has proven, terminal really in terms of his tenure. I'm not sure he could have, would have come back from that. I mean, to take you behind the curtain a little bit more, because these times are always a bit frenetic. There is one of the three of us here who managed to slot in a trip to a supermarket to get some sustenance. I won't reveal who that is. You can make your own guesses on maybe who's looking the most the most well fed out of all of us.
I'm going to say portly.
No, not quite. Sam. I mean, yeah. Paint the picture for us outside the ground, because obviously you went out there after the full time whistle. There's lots of footage now about the size and scale of the protests that unfolded outside the directors' entrance, also outside the south stand. Our colleague who works for the BBC and Final Score, Mark Webber, was also out there and sent me some clips and videos of it as well. It looked well. Hopefully, first of all, because we're testing out a new mic, that's working. So shout if you can't hear Sam. I'm sure hopefully you will. Give us some colour and idea of what that protesting was like outside the ground after the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting in a way that I'd say, and hopefully people don't take offence from this, it wasn't very Norwich-like. I think a lot of the, probably why it's taken a bit of time to get to this point. I mean, you see clubs like West Ham and Rangers who have maybe been more typically ruthless than Norwich have, both, you know, in and outside the club. And it maybe comes more naturally to certain clubs. I think Norwich, it's the first time I'd say I've ever seen it like that. You said unprecedented earlier, and I'd completely agree with that, to the point where there were actually Leicester fans kind of going, oh, what's going on here? And kind of running. People will know that hill that kind of separates the main road from the stadium. And kind of Leicester fans were impressed and coming and standing on the top of that hill to watch it all unfold. There were a few flares that were let off. There were a lot of people. I think there were a good amount of people after the whole game. And obviously a lot of people who went to that game would have seen that, but I would say double, triple that amount. It got to the point where at one point it was almost the whole of that road, sort of outside the back of Carrow Road that was full up of people. And they were certainly angry. There was quite a hostile feeling towards, obviously, Ben Napper, Liam Manning, most of the staff at the club, a lot of police as well. And it did feel like the sort of thing where once you've seen that, and of course, you know, the likes of Ben Napper and Liam Manning won't have seen that firsthand or you know, without, they might have seen it through a window or something, but certainly once you've seen that, it's hard to say that you can carry on from that perspective. And I think the main thing that stood out to me was just that I haven't seen that personally, and obviously I haven't there will be fans who have followed Norwich for a lot longer than me, but but I have for maybe 16 years now.
It feels like the most pertinent to go to historically go back would be kind of the Chase protests, which I wasn't alive for either, so I can't comment. But certainly in terms of what you've heard, I don't think there was the same, because there was talk of like police horses and stuff. I don't think we've got into those realms. But actually what struck me today as I walked into the ground was the sheer volume of police. I actually said to someone as we went in, I hope there's no crime in Norwich today, because like the whole Norfolk police resource was here. But there was dog units and those big vans that you see. I think one of those, but there was one of those parked outside the entrance, was there, I think, on some
points? Yeah, I think so. There were a few around the corner as well, where, you know, if you have sort of away supporters, where they expect it to be a big, you know, a big clash potentially between fans, like an Ipswich game. They would have those vans parked outside the corner, sort of where the gun club is. There were a few vans there. Yeah, quite a lot of police. I think the police presence was relatively constant. I can't remember the last time, maybe when there's been an incident, but from the start of the game, there were police at the top of the snake pit, kind of almost preparing for something to happen. So I think the police presence was really significant compared to what it normally would be, even for kind of a derby game or a playoff game or a big game of that stature. So certainly there was a big police presence, and it did feel very, very serious. It was kind of I don't know about intimidating, because obviously I kind of knew what I was expecting. I'd seen a flavour of it at Hull, but it did make you think, kind of, if you were Ben Napper, and I'm not necessarily advocating for this kind of protest to result in, you know, any change that people want, but certainly if you were Ben Napper watching that, I think it would have been hard to watch that, accept it, absorb it, and just go again. I think somebody actually commented on our YouTube channel when we put videos out of it, you know, that's kind of fan power. And I did get the sense that, although obviously the footballing evidence was almost too great to ignore, it does feel like when that sort of thing starts to get involved, that it probably did have an impact as well.
It felt, I mean, again, I've said, I think I might have said this evening here, it was that sort of time where you don't know what you've said and what you haven't. But the image for me of those players walking around the pitch with a police officer and being guided to a corner of the stadium to get on a coach, which they had to get in for police advice after protests last weekend. I mean, I said it in my verdict, that's just not this football club, Paddy, is it? That's not something I've ever seen happen at this football club. And the volume of anger, it's clearly, I know there was a minority against Hull last week that the club say, and they released a statement on this, crossed the line. Clearly that is unacceptable. That's abhorrent. That's not what we want to see. But by and large, they are fans there who are angry and are furious about the state of their football club. And so it's difficult with change, because it tends to be the head coach that goes first, because that's the easiest one. That's almost the first domino to fall. But I think you can sense, certainly on some of these comments I'm seeing come through, that isn't where Norwich fans want this to sort of start and stop with Liam Manning.
No, and there's a certain individual, I think, judging by those comments, they'd like to see go in swift order, and that's Ben Napper. And obviously, we're in a very live situation now. Things are moving very fast, but there isn't any sense that if that's what you're wishing for as an Norwich fan, you're going to get that wish granted anytime soon. Apart from anything else, you know, they now need to embark on a new head coach search. If Ben Napper hypothetically isn't there, then who's leading that? And you might say, well, that's not a reason to keep him, but it would seem that he still retains the support of the people who matter. And in the here and now, and the fact for me is that, you know, it's his quotes in the club statement. You know, it's very clearly him owning that decision. Far too late for many, and maybe not enough in terms of why isn't he walking as well. What Mark said on Radio Norfolk, that Ben needs Liam, Liam needs Ben, almost entwining their futures together. Well, Liam is now no longer. So is there a question mark now over Ben? I guess, you know, we can't sit here 2 hours after the decision and talk with any degree of certainty, because this is going to be a very fluid situation from here. But my sense would be that the priority very much now is you're without a head coach. You need to find a head coach. What you don't need is to go then and try and find a head coach and a sporting director who then needs to possibly find a head coach. I mean, we know there was that speculative kite flying around Ben Kensel's presence last weekend, which pulled in then Kieran Scott as a potential candidate. You know, I haven't kept abreast of it today, but it looks like Middlesbrough have lost their manager. So, you know, you don't know what's going on there at that football club. And could there be, you know, could there be wheels within wheels moving? But in the here and now, nothing that we are hearing would suggest that there's going to be another corner flag coming anytime soon, and it's going to be Ben Napper departing. So you know, I saw a question mark there. If Ben Napper stays, you know, what about the next home game? It's still going to be very anti the mood, and that may be the case. I think the key is now, again, you know, as much as we can talk with any clarity, but if Ben Napper is still in the post and is still leading this head coach search, then what is abundantly clear, and it feels already to me for a lot of Norwich fans, is it's irreconcilable differences. As I put in my pointers, I don't think you can bring him back to the fan base, but they're going to have to try now, because if he is front and center of this, they're going to have to somehow get their messaging a little bit better than they have on one or two instances in the recent past. Two more examples on Friday afternoon, but on top of the delivery farce, which was, you know, put out just before the derby. But joking aside, if it is Ben Napper, and we have nothing to suggest it won't be leading this process, then, you know, there's that. There's an AGM coming around the corner. If Ben Napper is entrusted with this next cycle, and that also, let's be honest, encompasses then a January transfer window, and there's a hell of a lot of questions being asked about the recruitment he has led in the period he's been here. If he's going to be entrusted with another one of those, then, and we may be jumping ahead of where this process is now, because it begins first and foremost with the head coach replacement. But if it is Ben Napper, then they will have to do some very subtle, very deft messaging from him. He's going to have to front up, and he's going to have to take the flak as he is taking it inside stadiums. But I think he's going to have to be front and center of, you know, in front of media, and trying to answer some of the questions that, if a lot of them fans were able to get in a room with him, then I'm sure they would like to put towards him. So, yeah, but in answer to your question, is Ben Napper going off the back of Liam Manning? To our knowledge, no.
I mean, just to come back to you, Pat, because when we did speak to Ben Napper, and it wasn't the unveiling window, it was the window before where he essentially ruled Jack Wilshere out of contention, won his fourth game in a row today, by the way, Jack Wilshere. So good start for him at Luton Town. You put to him that this very point, that actually this is now a call of his judgment, isn't it? The fact he sacked Torup in April, then chose Manning. Attanasio in our podcast said he was choice, what, 1, 2, and 3. He wasn't asked to speak to anyone else in that process. So that was, again, very much Napper's man. He's now gone, what, a few months into a four-year contract that the club gave him. I'm sure that will be expensive to pay out. It's a big call now of Ben Napper's judgment and where he stands as Norwich City sporting director tonight.
Well, I feel in this period, you know, primarily Attanasio coming out and what he said about, you know, I mean, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but the Nunes element of his recruitment, but also the fitness and rehabbing, enduring nightmares they've had. Liam Manning has gone in, or did go in on those two topics as well. That, for me, is undermining Ben Napper, because those areas, the buck stops with him as the sporting director. He leads the recruitment in those touch points in the summer. When we put to him about the fitness side of it, he said, no, that is fair comment. We need to get an audit. We need to get under the bonnet of that. We'll roll it on to this point. And where are we now? It's injury after injury after injury. And even Marco Attanasio coming out and saying now they've had to get outside auditors who've come back and more or less reported that in the Championship, they're bottom of the pile in those areas. So all of that, for me, leads to Ben Napper's door. And, you know, he's, I mean, stating the obvious, but he's savagely wounded. But, you know, in, to use that analogy, you know, nothing to me, I look at it, we've just gone past his two-year anniversary. Is that squad better than the one he inherited? No. Has the recruitment been better than some of his predecessors' recruitment? No. We've got this issue with the injuries, and it seems to have exacerbated since he came through the door. But also, is the product better on the pitch? No. Are they a more competitive team at the right end of the Championship? No. So I don't know what measures Ben Napper you could rate him, other than, and you touched on it in your anniversary piece, if you look at it, and it's pertinent because we just had the accounts produced, he has turned a profit in terms of transfer business in and out. Of course, the comeback to that is, well, he's been selling players that he didn't recruit, that his predecessor recruited. Let's see if he can, you know, upsell on Jurasek and upsell on Cernach when he comes back fit, and pretty much all the other ones he's brought through the door. That'll be the real test. But he has turned a profit. Now, is that one of the factors that is maybe insulating him? Because we know, in terms of the model of this football club, yes, they now have a very wealthy ownership group around Marco Attanasio, but they also are wanting themselves to be, where they can, self-sufficient. And in the area of transfer strategy, you could argue they have been, in terms of they've turned a profit. But for the things that matter for supporters on the pitch, then no, they're not better off for 2 years of Ben Napper's stewardship. And many would probably say they're a lot worse than when he first walked through the door. And that's saying something, given what he inherited at that point. So, yeah, I don't know. I personally don't know how you put it back together between him and the fan base and him being the footballing figurehead of this football club. I just, it feels to me too much water's gone under the bridge.
Well, they've completely lost confidence in him, haven't they?
So, exactly. So how do you put that back together? I don't know. The answer has to come from within that club if the call is being made. Nope, we're going to stick with Ben. He's going to lead this next recruitment drive and he will then, beyond that, take this forward for the rest of this season. And that includes another transfer window. If that is the case, to go back to my earlier point at the risk of repeating myself, then the messaging has to be far better around him. And that's him getting a hold of the messaging by him fronting up as well. The messaging has to be much better than it has. I mean, couldn't be any worse, but it definitely needs now a concerted strategy of, okay, you know, him coming out. And it's sort of, there's a sense of that, although it's not directly about the criticism directed towards him, but those quotes in that press statement tonight are about, we get the fan frustration. You know, we've let you down almost. But it's, you know, it's very collegiate in terms of those quotes. You know, there's a lot of fans who are squarely looking at Ben Napper. You've let us down. You've not delivered. We're a poorer outfit on and off the pitch in your stewardship than we were prior to. So is it any wonder that a lot of fans don't have any confidence in him to now lead this from here, to get another head coach recruitment right and get the season moving in the proper direction, and then a January window where you look at take a step back, look at the recruitment and think, yeah, okay, I can see what you've done there. I like some of that recruitment, because, and again, it was evident today, you know, who of the players who've arrived in the summer could you really say has improved that group of players? Not too many now. Now Harry Darling started to nosedive. I can't think of any other than the guy who scored the goal. Yeah, he's the only one. And as Liam Manning said in his final post-match, and it is a bit simplistic to say, but I'm inclined to agree with him. If he'd been fit, then they're probably not where they are, which is nearly cut adrift, you know, because he has shown he is a cut above and he knows where the goal is in this league. And obviously that then loops back around to injuries. You could argue that, well, that was one of the injuries that you couldn't lay at the door of City's physical performance output, because it was a knee injury that he did in a challenge at Coventry. But nevertheless, in the round, 12 new players come through the door. Most of them have been misses rather than hits.
Yeah, and I will say at this point, we have asked Ben Napper on a multiple occasions, which have been denied. I mean, he's going to have to do a press conference now at some stage, unveiling a new coach. So we will get to put some of those questions to him in relatively order. You'd expect that to be before Norwich City's next game in the Championship against Birmingham after the November international break. But if it goes beyond then something, I think, has gone a little bit wrong. I mean, and again, Sam, I come back to you in terms of what you saw outside the ground today, because even inside the ground, the fact that, yes, there were barbs and there were comments about Liam Manning and the style of play and his football generally, we know it's difficult for coaches to come back from that. We saw it with Dean Smith. We saw it to an extent with David Wagner, who, yes, kind of struggled on, got them to the playoffs, but still fans never really took to him, or a section of the fan base never took to him. But it's Ben Napper's name primarily, isn't it, that has been sung with the most volume inside Carrow Road in terms of those chance for change and for somebody to carry the can for this?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you do try and work out kind of where the blame lies, a lot of fans would have said Napper, and almost the subtext to what Attanasio was saying as well on Radio Norfolk, a lot of it was about, you know, backing Liam Manning and almost assessing Ben Napper and you know, looking at his position. So it certainly felt to me like going into this game, the kind of negative momentum was mainly with Napper, but it kind of comes down to what you said earlier in terms of how much easier it is to sack a head coach, because when you sack a head coach, you've got other people who can pick up, you know, their slack. You've got Ryan Gary and Tony Roberts, you know, Nick Stanley, who can take on the role temporarily, and you've still got a sporting director in place who can go and appoint the next one. Whereas when you get rid of a sporting director, I suppose it would all be on Neil Adams to try and step up and kind of fill that void once Napper went. And of course, he hasn't got really any direct experience as a sporting director. So it certainly is easier to get rid of a head coach. Also, you know, if we're frank, the sporting director is in charge. So, you know, Ben Napper isn't going to sack himself, but he does have the power to sack Liam Manning if he sees something changing. So I suppose the levers that he could pull are either resigning, which for obvious reasons felt unlikely, and sacking Manning and doing nothing. And obviously, given what we've discussed, doing nothing wasn't an option. So The only lever he's really going to pull in that scenario is sack Liam Manning. So I can kind of see why it's happened, even though a lot of the momentum is with Napa, or with Napa. And if you asked a lot of fans, they would have said Napa was their number one kind of priority in that sense. But also I'd say, for me, in the short term, maybe changing the head coach makes more sense. I think you look at their record for all the things that Paddy highlighted there in terms of the recruitment, certainly the feeling off the pitch, and you know what I saw outside the ground after full time as well. It does feel to me like they need major structural change and really big long-term change so that this club looks very different and much more like the way fans want it to feel. But right now, they're 23rd in the Championship. They're, is it 5 points adrift now from safety?
Might be four.
It's four or five. Which either way is a relatively scary situation. And to be honest, you look at their wage bill, you look at the size of club, the players they've got who aren't going to want to play in League One, frankly. It's not really a team or a club that can afford to go down to League One. So I'd say in the short term, what's more likely to get the most out of players who you can't change until January? What's most likely to give players a short-term bounce for results so that they can close that points gap and hopefully address, you know, worries about relegation as quickly as possible? Sacking the head coach, getting in a new head coach who players see, yeah, it's 4 points, who players see...
Maths isn't my strong point, so I'll scout.
But yeah, I just think, yeah, changing the head coach is much more likely to have an effect on the players, on the results in the next few weeks, because as much as I think long-term, strategic, large-scale change is needed, the priority for them right now should be staying out of League One, because being in the Championship makes it easier to get good head coaches than it is being in League One, better players. It's, you know, obviously you get more money being in the Championship than in League One. So they've got a lot of reasons why, for me, and I suppose maybe this plays into the sort of appointment they need as well. But I think when you look at the sporting director or head coach, who makes more of an instant impact, I think sacking the head coach does rather than sacking the sporting director, even if I kind of agree with most fans that I've spoken to in terms of, yes, Manning made mistakes, but Napa clearly has not given him a squad of players that's good enough to, well, absolutely nowhere near good enough to compete for what they want to compete for in terms of promotion, but certainly to be in the area they are now, I think Napa has to carry the can for probably the majority of it, for me, to be honest.
Let's reflect briefly then on Liam Manning's reign, which I think is hard to argue. It's been anything other than an unmitigated disaster, well, probably a mitigated disaster, really, with all of the stuff that we've mentioned. But he leaves Norwich City 23rd after just 15 Championship games, obviously 17 in total with the two cup games, 9 points. It's, I think, the lowest win percentage of any Norwich manager in history. It's one of the shortest reigns. I mean, Paddy, it's been a disaster, hasn't it, from pretty much start to finish, Liam Manning's reign as Norwich City's head coach?
I mean, it's strong, that, Connor, but you can't argue anything. I mean, as you say, unwanted record after unwanted record, really. I mean, you know, 16 years in the Derby.
No.
That's now on his CV, in these parts anyway, where it matters.
Got a COVID, man. I don't know what's going on here.
Now you're talking. There's a proper team. But and today, that terrible... Terrible. I mean, did I see some stats after the game that is now
the Championship record?
No team in the history of the Championship
at the start of the season. Yeah,
I've gone 8. I've gone 7 in the league at home. I mean, it's some doing, isn't it? 21 points to play for in front of your own fans.
Well, I think it was you and who said it's almost impressive, isn't it? Because you'd expect a bit of luck or something along the way to at least get a point or something here and there.
And today, we put the tin hat on it. You know, they're struggling. They get themselves in front again, as they did with a few of the other games here this season. Wrexham springs to mind. And then just for me, that the equaliser, I know we're not going to dissect a game that is now, will swiftly pass into the history books, but that in microcosm summed it up. It's like Kenny McLean's looking up. He's like, he's blinded by the floodlights. I don't know what he's trying to do there. He's just like motionless. Mirko Topic is far bigger than, I think it was, Patson Daka. He doesn't get off the ground. So he lifts, heads the ball down, edge of the box, there is Bobby Cordova-Reed, totally unmarked, at 1-1, given the backdrop of how desperate they are for these points at Carr Road. And it's a good finish. Swivels half volley, past Kovacevic, pace is beating him. But you just think, my God, I mean, that is Did these players, did they not, just not grasp the seriousness of the situation? And of course, you know, we're now, it's Liam Manning who's collateral damage in that, or it's Liam Manning who deservedly is going for that. But to take Sam's point, I mean, anybody who thinks that group of players are equipped to be anything other than scrapping around in the lower reaches of the Championship are delusional, because, and I know confidence is at rock bottom, but they've got nothing about them. Individually, collectively, they're just, you know, it's embarrassingly inept for the amount of money that's been spent on that group of players. And, you know, we saw that the end of Torrop's era was sort of, you know, ran aground on maybe players deciding that they weren't having him. And I'm not suggesting that that's been the case here, but it certainly hasn't looked like a group who've wanted to put their shoulder to the wheel for another head coach. So, you know, in the points we've already discussed, I don't think this, and what Hux said earlier on tonight, I don't think changing Liam Manning necessarily is suddenly going to spark a Lazarus-like recovery for this group of players. I think it's a very average squad. And again, coming back to the messaging, I think the messaging will have to be this season, by hook or by crook, you stay in the division. And then it has to, for me, it's getting blown up and probably started again. And that just pushes back any plans or any aspirations to get to the big league. Because this group of players, they don't fit to purpose for me. That we've talked about it liberally. You know, it's a squad that has kind of almost melded together, spanning two very different head coaches in terms of philosophies and profiles of players. And it's just a mess. And what you're seeing on the pitch is a mess. But that isn't to excuse Liam Manning, and he's paid with his job tonight. I don't think it just never looked like he had a grasp on what he was trying to do. It was almost like, I don't know which way I turn here with this group of players. What do I want them to be? What type of players do I want? What type of style are we trying to play? Could any of us ever now say, now the dust has settled, we knew what Liam Manning was trying to do in possession? Don't think we could, really. So many functional footballers, so much lateral stodginess, you know, encapsulated for me. What has he done to Josh Sargent? You know, there is a player who, by common consent, was the best of his type in the division over the last 2-3 seasons, scoring goals after goals after goals. He looks a shell of a player now. And that cannot be, that's not all down to Liam Manning, but I think he has to take large responsibility for that. That the system he's played put around him, what he's asked the players around Josh Sargent to do, has simply not worked. And you've now got a player there of some, you know, repute, and probably Norwich's best in terms of saleable assets, and you've just degraded him to the point where, what is he now, 8-9 games without a goal? And of course, you know, you go back to Hillsborough and he's had a great chance a minute in and and obviously that for me is the confidence has gone from that player, as it has from a lot of these players. But still, you know, he was feeding on one chance a game, two chances a game. How many times do we bemoan the derby being the obvious one? He's doing his best work round the halfway line. That, you know, so for me, there's a lot of things that Liam Manning, I think, needs to have, you know, some acceptance that it wasn't all on him. But I do think squarely in the area of setting a team up, what was he trying to do? What was his identity? What was Liam Manning's Norwich City all about? I don't think any of us have a real idea. And more to the point, it looked like the players didn't really have an idea. It's almost like the players couldn't try and take on board this empowerment that he talked about liberally, not wanting to like identikit the players into, you must do this in this situation. No, I'm going to give you the opportunity to see the game in real time, make decisions. And maybe he didn't have enough players who were able to take that on board. And if that is the case, he should have sensed that, him and his coaching staff, a lot earlier than this far into the season, and put something else in place. Because, you know, every week we seem to be coming away from a Norwich game saying, you know, that was just pretty unedifying stuff, really, to have to sit through. And I'm sure it was for those players as well, because it just looked like a group who either didn't understand what that head coach wanted from them, or just didn't simply believe and buy into his methods. And that's how you get to a point where we sat here tonight, 15 games, 9 points for a team with top six aspirations before a ball was kicked. So, I think he has a fair amount to answer for. Not everything, to echo what Hook said, but for me, in the area that was under his direct responsibility, i.e. the product on the pitch week in, week out, that has been regressed from even where Torrop left it for me.
Do you know what I was just thinking as you were talking about reflecting on Manning's reign? It might be quite a harsh question, but I'm interested to know what you guys think. In terms of, his actual reign, not the mitigating factors, things like that. Is he the worst ever Norwich head coach? Because I think about it, I think there are obviously many factors. I don't think the squad is very good. There are obviously many things going on. But most of their managers have had, even the ones that have gone terribly towards the end, haven't achieved much. There's been some sort of good period. Manning came in, has never won a home game as Norwich head coach, has gone after, 5 months, 3 months of the championship season. Is he the worst one?
Your Grant was pretty bad.
Yeah.
He's got to be in the conversation, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I think he probably is. Certainly my lifetime, obviously, there's something like the 1900s. But yeah, in terms of if you lay everything bare, I mean, the fact he's got 15 games. I need to double check this, so I don't want to definitively say it, but I think it's the shortest reign of a Norwich manager, if not ever, then certainly for a long, long time. I had 20 games in my head as being the thing. I'm sure someone will maybe come on and correct me. I think the thing with Peter Grant was he just was a bit out of his depth, wasn't he? And I think he walked in the end.
Funny enough, that's the point. Uncle Mort's made there. Yeah. You couldn't argue, which is what I asked Manning tonight. You know, is it time for you to... Is it
very
time
disrespectful.
Well, it was on the money, wasn't it? Let's be honest. My crystal ball. But you do get to a point, and it isn't a reflection in terms of you've thrown it in because you haven't given everything. If you've given absolutely everything and it's still not working, then at what point do you... And of course, you know, the cynics out there will say he's not going to walk and, you know, walk out on the financial recompense coming his way with compensation, but I'm sure they could have come to an arrangement on that element. But fair point. Yeah, Peter Grant did realise maybe it was too much for him and held his hand up and stepped aside.
I mean, the other one, is clearly Glenn Rhoda.
But he kept them up one season.
He did.
That's what I'm thinking.
He did.
What was it, 8 points in October or whatever?
November, that was the quote. The second season was disastrous, I guess. Poor Gunny. I love Gunny, but we have to put him, I guess, in the conversation for it. Brian Hamilton, there's a few, isn't there, that maybe weren't great, but the fact he's kind of in that conversation is not a place where you want to be. I don't know if this is
directed at us or not. Surely not.
Well, we haven't sacked him, so I don't.
Did we go out there on the park and play like that? No. I don't think we did, Mario.
I would have played better.
Old fruit.
Yeah. To come to you, Sam, away from that. I guess this is where it is. I think the fact you've asked that question probably puts him in a very difficult, puts him in the realm of some of those players that are coaches that we've mentioned. But I think we've mentioned the mitigation around it. Clearly, as we've said, it's not all on Liam Manning. And the fact we haven't talked about is the players as well, who often kind of get left out of this conversation. We look up and we look kind of at the head coach level. We don't often scratch beyond the surface. The fact the players have presided over a run of 8 defeats at home, of 9 points from 15, for a group that was expensively assembled and has quality in there. We've seen that individually. There are players in there that are very, very good for their level. The fact they haven't produced performances, that they need to take accountability for that as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think part of it is the sort of personality they've got. I think although I'm reticent to always go to the sorts of diagnoses Liam Manning had for the problems that his team had. I think everybody picked this up, to be fair. I'm not saying anything particularly new, but he was talking so much about behaviours and, you know, intangibles and leaders and things like that. It did get a bit much for someone who basically never really talked about tactics publicly during his whole reign. But there is an element of that, I think. And he talked quite a lot, actually, at his last pre-match press conference about the fact that he felt like they needed more leaders, more big personalities in the group. And I think they've got a few. I think everyone's seen how Kenny McLean has stepped up in the last few weeks. It feels like he's been trying to play in every position. I think Josh Sargent has looked like that kind of leader. And they've probably got some big personalities who are relatively new to the group, like Vladan Kovacevic, who I think have shown that. But for me, it's a group with too many players who can fade into the background when things aren't going well. You look at... I don't want to really single them out, and there are plenty more examples, but I think it stands out to me, particularly in centre midfield, where there's so much stuff to be done. You know, it's such an active position where your presence really should be felt, and, you know, everyone should know about you. And I look at sort of Mirko Topic, Pelle Mattsson, and you watch a game like today and you just feel like they were kind of just floating around the pitch, you know, a couple of 10-yard passes here, you know, a tackle there. a bit of running. You know, I think they had too many players who were willing to just go through the motions and kind of leave the tough stuff and taking the risks and the bravery that Liam Manning likes to talk about so much up to Kenny McLean, you know, who almost every time he had the ball, it felt like had to play a pass through for Josh Sargent or Sargent to drop deep. He made a sliding tackle, you know, in his own half today to stop a counter-attack, or Harry Darling to make kind of heroic defensive interventions when he was at his best. I think there are too many players in that group who are willing to let other people do it. I also think it is a big question of quality. I think there are some players there who could be absolutely giving everything and could have the kind of leadership and personality qualities that every manager would choose. And I still don't think there's enough footballing quality in that group, to be honest, to be in and around the playoffs. But certainly, I think you look at the way that it ended for Torup and sort of the role they had to play in that. And we can have, you know, another discussion about whether sacking Torup partly because of that was a good idea and the sort of power it gives the players. But yeah, we saw it with them. We've seen the way that they've been playing the last few weeks under Manning. Certainly Manning needed to take some responsibility. We've already spoken about Ben Napa, but a big part of it is the players as well. And they need to find some impetus and some ownership and some responsibility from somewhere, because I don't think they've been showing enough of that.
And finally on Manning, Paddy, before it's, you know, long live the king is dead, long live the king, etc. And we go on to what, and I guess who next. I think the feeling for me on a personal level is sadness, because you think he was the first Norwich-born head coach. There were the local ties. He's clearly, and we know it's been well publicised and documented, he's had a very difficult year of his life and in his personal life, and losing a baby and all of that stuff is, you know, unimaginably difficult. And he spoke about that helping to, I guess, maybe put the struggles of this job in perspective. We obviously dealt with him on a weekly basis. All of us dealt with him on a weekly basis. I know people get a little bit sick of it in terms of if people go, oh, well, he's a nice guy, and what does that mean? But I think it is important that we recognise the human aspect of this, because I don't think he ever, and it's, well, I definitely know he never set out for this to go the way it has been. Clearly, he took a big lift, big step in leaving Bristol City. I would say the Liam Manning that we saw when the cameras weren't on was a lot different to the Liam Manning we saw when the cameras were on. I think it's a shame that we didn't see more of that Liam Manning, in my view. And I hope when he goes away and reflects and on this job, I hope he, for the next one, we see a lot more of the what I would describe as the real Liam Manning, the one that is probably a little bit more engaging and switched on and emotionally aware than perhaps the one that when that camera did come on. I recognise it's difficult. So, yeah, I think probably it's always sad when someone loses their job on a human level. There's always the families, got a little boy and a wife and whatnot, and a lot of family around the area. He's from the area. It's just a shame this hasn't worked out for him personally.
Yeah, I'd echo all of that. Yeah, he's a very genuine guy. And on a human level, you could warm to him a lot more than some of his predecessors. I won't name any names, but you can probably guess. And it is sad, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, the personal circumstances he's had to contend with, him and his family. For me, yeah, it is very sad, actually, that, you know, as he again said tonight in what was his last official engagement as Norwich head coach, he cares deeply about this club. He cares deeply about doing this job well. And that's why I go back to, you know, it's not all on him, but unfortunately, he is indispensable. He is the first one who they were going to, you know, remove from post in an attempt now to try and halt this tailspin. And that's, as he said, also that's the industry he's in. He was quite candid. He's a very sharp operator. He knows how it works. That you win, you're a hero. You don't. He said something else I won't repeat. But effectively, along the lines of, you know, you go from hero to zero. And he knows in a very volatile profession that he's in, and he said this a few weeks back, you know, you don't even get now 6 months, and he's nearly got 6 months. So maybe by that measure, he did get a good run. But, you know, it's a matter of games now before the pressure comes on, particularly, and this might be something they have to reflect on as a club, when you frame the change from Torup to him as this is almost not a guaranteed top six contender, but he's proven, and that's where we're aiming the bar at this season. That immediately means he's under pressure and that he couldn't afford this long growing evolutionary part to his early part of his Norwich career. So he was on the back foot from the start, and, you know, for a lot of reasons. He wasn't able to get, as he said, you know, it's a process, but we also need to win while we're going along this process. He simply wasn't able to do that. That exposed maybe some of his coaching flaws. You know, there was a lot of talk about his in-game lack of ability, you know, that horrendous trend of conceding goals between like half-time and the hour mark. That wasn't a quirk. You know, that was something that him and his coaching staff needed to try and eradicate. They wasn't able to do that, it would seem. Many other facets of it as well. Even today, I thought, you know, you've got two games, you've got a two-week period the other side. Surely Chris Garden could stay on that pitch. Unless he's come to the side and said, look, I'm done. I can't go on anymore. Because the minute he came off, that game tilted. That game tilted. They didn't have that threat at the top end of the pitch anymore. And as it's turned out, you know, it's proven again to be, the wrong decision. While accepting that, you know, there's a player they're still trying to manage and who he felt was going to be important moving forward. But in the here and now, you had to win that game today. So I personally would have thought you would have been better keeping him on, given there was no game for 2 weeks, the other side. But yeah, when push comes to shove, you just, you know, funnily enough, I don't know randomly why I was on our descent down TikTok that we have to go to when we're posting content. I saw a Paul Lambert clip a couple of days ago where he talked about when he got the sack from Villa, and he went and did, as a lot of them do, they go and observe training at, you know, various outposts. And he went and saw Ancelotti, who can't think where he was, might have been Real Madrid at that point.
Do you know he's won Champions Leagues as well?
Yeah, he didn't mention that. But what he did mention was he basically went and observed training, then he had some lunch with Ancelotti, and Ancelotti was saying what happened with Villa, what happened with that experience there. And Lambert was saying he went away from maybe the beliefs he'd had at Norwich, and he tried to change too many things and systems and personnel. And then Ancelotti said, look, and then reeled off how he'd been sacked. I mean, to be fair, the clubs were top level. He said, you've been sacked is nothing. You know, we've all been sacked. If you're in this management game, the only guarantee probably is you will get sacked. And he was reeling like off Juventus and wherever, all these, but you know, the point being there is probably one of, if not the best modern managers, if you look at his record, and he's had plenty of sacking. So if you're Liam Manning tonight, you'll go away, you'll have to lick your wounds, and it'll be interesting where he pitches up next. You know, you would think he's done enough. Do you think championship?
I think he probably will.
And then it'll be interesting to take your point that if he uses what has been a very sour experience, but for the betterment of him as a coach. And I think he would be well advised trying to let his personality come through a bit more, which is one thing you couldn't level at Torrop. And it probably bought Torrop a lot of credit with the fan base, the wider fan base, I would think, even through the tougher times. And that's a shame. But, you know, we always got the sense with him that he saw the press conferences almost don't allow any detonations to occur and just be as, you know, as bland almost as you could be in front of a camera. But once that camera went off, yeah, he was a very different person. And he'd be well advised maybe trying to bring that out in his next posting, because it probably will help him in the tougher times. It might buy him a little bit more credit with his fan base, because there wasn't many in his corner when things started to go south. And as we've all seen, you know, there was a lot more pointing out some of the repetitive elements of his press conferences.
Indeed, as these things turn and move, Sam, it's, as I said, it's the king is dead, long live the king, and it's all about what next, and I guess more importantly, who next. We'll come on to what the early bookmakers are saying, because that's always the place where these things start. Does this feel, I mean, this is going to be Norwich's fifth coach since Farker, and he went about 4 years ago, so 5-4, which is not great by any measure. Is this beginning to feel like I don't want to say an impossible job, because it's not, but clearly it's a very difficult job for, and we've seen plenty of different types, younger, more experienced, inexperienced, someone who's had immediate success, someone who's come in from the cold in Wagner, someone who's been sacked recently in Dean Smith, someone completely unknown in Johannes Hoftorp, and all of them have kind of failed. It's a bloody difficult job to whoever's next.
Yeah, I saw someone said in the comments earlier, something like, are we Watford in disguise? And it certainly has that vibe of a poison chalice at this point. I think it's more to do with the appointments than the strategy, to be honest. I think there are certain clubs where it's almost normal to sack head coaches. So it kind of, it just happens by, you know, and the coaches going in know that they will be the king for as long as, you know, it goes well and then they'll be sacked immediately, you know, after three losses or whatever. I think that's kind of the model at some clubs and coaches know they're going into that. I think the positive thing at Norwich is that that's not, I don't think that's what they're trying to do. I just think the appointments have mostly been quite bad over the last few years. I think that's mainly the problem, and they've had a lot of head coaches who don't really suit what they're trying to do. So I think probably the important thing in that sense this time around is getting some real clarity. I think they had not much around Dean Smith, not much around David Wagner. I thought, to be fair, with Torup, they knew exactly what they were trying to do and they did it, and then didn't really have the nerve to stick it out. There you go, Gary Howes saying about the Watford in disguise post. So credit to you, Gary. So they got it. I thought they got it right with Torup, and then it was muddled again with Manning. And I think what they really need to do is set out, either in private to themselves or in public, preferably for us, exactly what they want, what the profile of manager they want is, and go and get that person. And then they kind of know they're going in because they're exactly what the club wants. I think otherwise, it's difficult, because I'm not sure if I was a manager, I would be desperate to take the Norwich job. We were talking earlier about some of the potential candidates, and you kind of look at them and...
Do you want to hear them?
Yes. Give me them.
Let's hear them. So these are very, very early stage bookmakers' odds. Gary O'Neill, currently the favourite, 6-4, with odds checker, obviously, gamble responsibly and all of that stuff, and other bookmakers are available. And if you're listening to this afterwards, it could have changed drastically. This is as of 10-9 on Saturday evening. So Gary O'Neill, 6-4. Brendan Rodgers, interesting name, at 3-1. Michael Carrick, 4-1. Russell Martin, 5-1. Ralph Hasenhüttl, 12-1. Stephen Gerrard, 14-1. Alex Ravel, the Stevenage boss, at 16-1. And Michael Scabala, who's the Lincoln boss, 16-1 as well.
I just look at a lot of those names, and whether, you know, whatever merit they've got, kind of the reputations they've got, for me, those names are linked because everyone's kind of assuming it's classic Norwich in the Championship. I think it's easy to forget they're currently... Is it 23rd now? 22nd? 23rd. 23rd in the Championship. Those managers who could potentially wait around for, obviously, this Middlesbrough vacancy that's come up.
Southampton.
Could be one soon at Leicester, to be fair, if Cifuentes kind of... I mean, he got quite a relatively easy 3 points today. But if it goes back downhill for him, then that job could be coming up quite soon. And you look at these coaches, they could be waiting around for those jobs, or they could go to Norwich where there's a prospect you're in League One in 6 months. And it's easy to assume, and I kind of did assume, to be fair, straight away, that, you know, this is classic Norwich in the Championship. It's one of the biggest clubs in the division. But they're 23rd, and those coaches will be looking downwards as well as upwards. And that's where my worry would be in terms of attracting who they want. I'm not sure my favourite candidates are all on that list of, you know, the favourites. But yeah, I think attracting the big names will be the difficulty when you look at some of those.
Ange Postecoglou, 25-1, if anyone's interested in that. Wayne Rooney also. Eric Ten Hag, 16-1, which is actually that's the same odds as you could get on Paul at Cars Corporan, which feels a bit odd to me. But you take them with however much seriousness you want to. I tend not to. Paddy, in terms of, I don't know if his name's on that list or whether you want to go for candidate profile more generally, are we at a stage where Norwich just, as you said, need someone who can help them stave off relegation and a bit of a firefighter type? Or do you think there is still time, still scope for them to get someone who can come in and maybe play a bit more progressive and a bit more ideological to get them out of where they are at this moment in time?
Well, that's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because,
what is it, 31 games they've got left?
Yeah, I mean, there is plenty of time, but if you're going the more progressive route, they're in a relegation battle now. And, as we've seen, sadly, in this 15-game sample, that they look like they don't have the attributes you normally associate with teams who can scrap their way to survival. So do you then need somebody who isn't maybe more for the mid to longer term vision, but then isn't that very short term to just go with somebody, I don't know, you know, a firefighting type character who could, kicking and screaming, get this club over the line, and then you look at it again in the next summer? I don't know. I think I get the sense, and Attanasio reiterated it in his Norfolk touch point, that he's in for the long haul. And if that is the case, then that could afford, if it is Ben Napper driving this process, to think a bit more longer term, and with clearly the priority being keep us in this division. But if it was a more progressive type of coach, and you know, that's probably going to require windows of work to the squad, do you countenance that it might need a step back to go forward again? Because in the longer term, that might set you up as a club better to get to where Atanasio's stated they want to be, which is a sustainable Premier League club, not just a club who dips their toe in the water like they have the last two times and comes straight back down again. So that's quite a fascinating dimension here now in play. You know, is Ben Napper looking simply at between now and next May and doing whatever it takes in terms of a head coach to keep this squad up? Or do they try and broaden it out again? I mean, you just look at the two cycles he's gone with. He's gone with, for me, a more philosophical coach, a project coach in Torup, ripped that up after 10 months, goes more pragmatic, more domestic with Liam Manning 5 months later. So at this rate, it'll be 2 months and then the third one will be out the door as well. So I think it's hard to second guess where Ben Napper goes with this now. If it is Ben Napper who's entrusted with this, I don't think on the evidence of the two cycles he's had, we can really say definitively which of those candidates maybe fits what he's looking for. I mean, Gary O'Neill was at the top of the betting there. He was interviewed. He was one of the three.
I mean, it's worth saying at the time his camp were a bit keener to distance themselves from it than maybe a lot of the reports suggested at the time in the summer.
He's also now, has he rejected Wolves?
I thought he had, which would lead you to think he's not going to look at
Norwich. Was he linked with the Southampton job as well?
Was he?
Possibly. Obviously, there's the Middlesbrough job as well, which is, as things stand, probably
former,
more attractive.
He's a former Borough player, isn't he?
He played for everyone.
So, I don't know. I mean, I genuinely don't know at this stage of the proceedings, this close to obviously dispensing with Liam Manning, where they're at. And you just hope, because we've been told this previously, once we went from Torup to Manning, that Ben Napper is constantly evolving and evaluating so that they're not caught on the hoof and that we're not going from, you know, first gear now, that there's a process in place or a process that maybe can be picked up from previous, you know, head coach cycles that, you know, I mean, even the timescale, I'll throw this one at you boys. I mean, do you think we've got 2 weeks now effectively till Birmingham? Is a new manager in place before they go to Birmingham?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
That's going to be a very exciting fortnight ahead then, isn't it?
I think it's going to be tough.
So that would suggest it's maybe not in somebody who's in work, because you've got the compensatory, as they saw with the Bristol cycle. You know, that seemed to drag it out a little bit, didn't it, in terms of compensation and extracting people in work.
Yeah, but I suppose maybe you just spend the extra 200k or whatever this time around.
Well, you'd have no choice because the priority is to get somebody in the door. But
I did Smith in 2 weeks.
But he was out of work though, wasn't he? He'd been fired from Villa, hadn't he, the same weekend as Farker. So
look at Rob Edwards. That's gone.
Wagner was out of work. Wagner was out of work. That is
but
true.
Rob Edwards was in work. Yeah,
that is true. Yeah. I mean, clearly, you know, if they approach managers, coaches in post at the moment, you would imagine as there was with Manning, there'll be compensationary figures in play. Where Norwich are now, there's no real time to sort of drag this out. It's not a summer long. We can barter with Bristol City to get a compensation level that's suitable for Norwich. No, they're going to have to pay. If it's somebody in work, they're going to have to pay top dollar, get them out of there.
Do you think they go abroad? My feeling, and this is only, it's a please don't jump on this as any kind of insights. It's not. My feeling is no at the minute, just for the situation they're in. To then add the gamble, or, you know, Atanasio spoke about how Manning was an English proven coach and that.
It's just gone so badly.
I know. So I wouldn't completely turn off. But in terms of the situation, you tend to see clubs in this situation go domestic purely because, like, you increase the, I know all they're all a risk, but the sort of view is, and I'm not necessarily saying I agree with this, is that you know, if you're in this situation, you need someone who's sort of been around a little bit. I think we've seen over the last few months how, in my view, experience is an overrated thing anyway in coaching. Yeah. I don't really think it's as valuable as people talk about, and we've kind of seen that with this appointment. But that tends to be where clubs go, is the point I'm making.
You say that, but then what is the new incumbent going to inherit? Pretty much a top-heavy continental grade of player.
Well, and if you want to caveat that, and again, it's not my theory I'm putting out there, it's not my view, but I would point two coaches from recent times that I remember, and one of them was at Carrow today, who were appointed in similar circumstances at clubs. Danny Royal at Sheffield Wednesday, who didn't have any, I don't think he had any managerial experience, let alone English managerial experience, and Marty Cifuentes. Both of them came in and got those clubs up the league very quickly and did very impressive jobs while doing it. So my point is almost, I'm countering that, but I'm saying that is the view that a lot of people have, that when you're in this situation, you almost need a firefighter type who's had, you know, a million games at this level.
Well, this is, I mean, this is, we will no doubt be filling endless columns with which way they're going to pivot, because this is a fascinating, you know, aspect of this now is the profile of candidate that Liam Manning, that Ben Napper and co will be looking to draw upon. And I don't think we can. I think this little subsection of this debate would suggest that we can't really definitively say which way they're looking, because the two head coach cycles he's gone for have been very different in terms of the final candidate, both of whom were deemed to be in those particular races the outstanding candidate.
He likes younger coaches generally, doesn't he?
True.
Yeah, that's true. If you look at the two candidates, so
I think he's I think
that rules out Big Sam.
Steve Bruce,
Martin O'Neill. I've seen that. Yeah,
well, he's busy, Martin O'Neill.
I don't think it'll be Farker. We're getting a lot of Farker shouts. Subject
he's
to
still a job
Leeds, you know, dispensing with the services. I don't think he rides back in on a white charge.
I think what I don't know, this is where I'll pivot to you, Sam, and we'll close it. We'll come into the final 5 minutes now. So we've done now already. It feels to me probably where they are and what we've spoken about, this being a relegation battle, irrespective of who they're from, or sorry, who they are, or their passport, or their track record, or lack of, or wherever, feels to me like it needs to be someone who's capable quite quickly of lifting this group, and not just lifting this group, but probably lifting the fan base and the club generally. Someone who's maybe a little, and again, I generally don't mean any disrespect to Liam Manning when I say this, but someone maybe a little bit more charismatic, a bit more, you know, someone who's going to grab this. That feels like what it needs, a bit of energy about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think
that has to be backed up by stuff as well, by the way.
But, yeah. You know, yeah. I mean. Yeah. I think that's probably the less disputable bit for me. I think footballing wise, they could go in a few different directions, as we've kind of covered, you know, in terms of the league that they come from, the experience they've got, the style of play, things like that. But in terms of the personality, I don't really see how they could go for someone who's, as maybe PR trained, or, you know, that sort of personality type. And some of those managers are successful. You know, Liam Manning has been successful all the way up until his time at Norwich. Dean Smith has been successful at other clubs as well. But I think right now, for the situation they're in, you look at the players and how they're kind of trudging around at the moment, the fans as well. I think everyone needs somebody to kind of give them a little bit of a lift. And I think you can do that in different ways. You know, Torup did that with his communications and a kind of, very, very Danish, very well explained way of doing things, quite an intelligent way of doing things. David Wagner did it, even though his football was at completely the other end of the spectrum. His ideas were at the other end of the spectrum to Torup's. He had that kind of personality where he brought a bit of energy.
They galvanized that group, didn't
they? Yeah, he was really good at that. So just because you go for that type of personality, or a type of personality that gives you, galvanizes you a bit and has a bit more charisma, that doesn't necessarily dictate the footballing choices or the experience or anything like that. But I think putting that to one side, it's an absolute essential right now that they do have somebody with a bit of character and energy and optimism to lift everyone.
There we go. It's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks or so. Of course, the Championship pauses for the international break. I don't think we're going to be doing much pausing over the next couple of weeks. Norwich back in action later this month on the 22nd away at Birmingham. That is the start of a free game week, which for me probably adds to this search. The fact that they're going in back from, I think, Oxford at home is the next Carrow Road game, which, given where they are, is huge now. And that will be whoever the new guys, we would expect them certainly to be in by that point, or something has gone badly wrong. And that feels like a really important game. The wheel turns again. Paddy, Sam, thank you very much. Thank you all very much for watching us, for joining us. Pinken.com, the place to go, not just tonight, but also throughout the next period whilst Norwich City's head coach search begins. The wheel turns again. See you soon, folks. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need.
Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.